Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, y'all. Uncle Jimmy here. When you speak for yourself, you're forced to think for yourself. And when you think for yourself, the sports world looks different. In order to enjoy this podcast and this show, you need to have the courage to look at the world from alternative points of view and not be offended when you disagree. Speak for yourself isn't your Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram feed. SFY tells you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. So, welcome aboard, buckle up, and enjoy the ride.
All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley. Reggie Bush is back, and we're joined now by longtime NFL and college coach Hugh Jackson. All right, let's move to college football, where Jalen Hurts had a monster debut for Oklahoma this weekend, throwing for three touchdowns and running for three more. The performance vaulted Hurts into early Heisman talks, with Fox Bet giving the third best odds to win the award. It isn't too surprising, given that Hurts is now being coached by Lincoln Riley, who guided Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray to the Heismans in back-to-back years. All right, the question here is, who deserves more credit, the quarterbacks or Lincoln Riley's system?
System. Mm. And it's simple. I mean, there's really no pushback, but I know we're going to fill this segment up with somebody who's going to make up something to push back. We are talking about...
I'm thinking on it right now.
I know you are, you critic. We're talking about two backups and a walk-on. And they are 2-for-2, maybe going 3-for-3 with Heisman Trophy winners, including the number one overall pick. And y'all going to say, oh, it's them. Oh, you know what? They found lightning in the bottle. Mm-hmm. And they found it again. And they found it again. Well, if they keep finding it, guess what? It's them, not what they're finding. Yeah. They have a remarkable system. We know the talent. They always recruit well up front. And football's won in the trenches. This is Oklahoma. This is a blue blood, brother. And then you talk about the skill set players that they have. And then you have a young coach. And why I say his age is because Lincoln Riley reminds me in the same mold as all these young, innovative coaches like mm-hmm. a Sean McVay, who are groomed for the position, 2 years under Bob Stoops. And you not only are with Bob Stoops through his leaner years, but guess what comes when you're learning good and bad? When you get the opportunity, you know how to self-correct. David Stern and Adam Silver comes to mind in a different respect. You kind of learn like, oh, this works. Ooh, why'd he call that? I'm gonna mm-hmm. do this next time. Boom, opportunity strikes, you do that. So this is all about system, not devaluing the individuals. They all have performed. But boy, they were in a situation that was conducive to breeding their talent.
Yeah, I think I would put the ownership on the system as well. When I was watching the game, I'm watching some of the plays that he was scheming up for Jalen Hurts. They ran a counter quarterback draw. I've never seen this before, where he got the ball, started to the right, and then countered back with the running back and the tackle leading up through the hole. Now, he would have scored. He would have had 7 touchdowns if the tackle missed the block. And then turn around and try to go back. So, to me, I think it's the system. I love what Lincoln Riley is doing with Jalen Hurts. He's building the system around Jalen Hurts' strengths. He's not trying to force him to be Baker. Yeah. He's not trying to force him to be Kyler. He is allowing him to be himself. And I think that's the best thing you can do as a head coach.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think what both of them said is true. I kind of weigh on both sides of the fence.
Go ahead, please.
Because when I look at it, I mean, there's no question that the coach creates the environment and he has a system in place for these guys to be successful. You don't have the first pick of the draft 2 years in a row and not be very good at what you do. But at the same time, these guys are talented.
Yeah.
You know, the National Football League are taking these guys number one overall. Mm-hmm. So it says that there are some talent characteristics there that people are starting to see, and that's been showcased. So I think it's a little bit of both, and I think you have to have both to have that kind of success like you've had. You got to recruit great, you got to have a great system, and then people got to perform in the system.
Well, I think back to Houston, Andre Ware and David Klingler.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a system that you could put damn near anybody in, and they were going to throw for 10,000 yards. and I can't remember where Klingler went in the draft, but Andre Ware went very high, and both of them washed out. I don't think Baker Mayfield and Kyler Murray are going to wash out the way those guys did. So I'm careful about giving way too much credit to the system, because Oklahoma and what they're doing, I don't think this is what Houston was doing in the late 80s, mm-hmm. early 90s, where it was just purely the system and the quarterbacks just weren't that good. These quarterbacks are very good. I'll give Lincoln Riley credit for what Reggie's talking about. It's like, he does it a little different for each one of them.
Each one of them.
It's not the same thing. And again, that's why this isn't Houston, because that offense they're doing for Jalen Hurts, as Reggie just described, that's a bit different and plays to his strengths. But clearly, these guys are incredible, these young guys. Jalen Hurts, we saw it at Alabama, his character, and now we're starting to see, like, his play can also match the character in the right place. And then Baker Mayfield, clearly a special guy, and Kyler Murray.
The thing about Klingler, 6th overall, Andre Ware, 7th overall. But we have seen that rise and fall, so therefore we have a conclusion. Mm-hmm. What is Baker Mayfield going to be? For real. Not thoughts, not forecast. What is he? Mm-hmm. Kyler Murray. Huh? Like, so, and these are two number one overall.
They didn't go 6 and 7.
And, oh, look, no. And I'm not
the NFL agreed.
Right. And I'm not going to damn
one team
them.
Agreed for Kyler Murray.
Yeah, exactly. One team. And we didn't know the needs of other teams that are around top of the draft. But I'm not damning these guys. I'm just saying that there is no coincidence that two and now a third. And Jalen Hurts was a high-level performer at Alabama. We get it. It's not like he's crumbs. But now you go there and you set career yardage records, touchdown record. Like, in your first game, you trying to say this, not the system? Come on, man. Well,
to me, Marcellus, Jalen Hurts is clearly balled in.
Oh,
and so for go over there immediately and have that kind of says a lot about Jalen Hurts as well.
Yes, yes.
That's my point.
Well, I think he became a man through that situation because he handled it perfectly.
Mm.
How many times have we seen guys get mad about, you know, maybe somebody takes their spot, takes their shine, takes their reps, right? That had to be embarrassing for him. And now he's going to Oklahoma and doing it. And I think he played the situation perfectly because he went from having to see SEC defenses to now having to play against Big 12 defenses. Mm. So he's going to be doing this every week. Because Texas Tech is not going to be the defense that's going to slow him down.
Mm.
It's not Oklahoma State.
No. Mm.
And so now he's in a situation where he can go out and ball and put up these kinds of numbers every week and make his case for the Heisman every week. And guess who's going to have to answer questions about that? Nick Saban. Every week, every time.
Nick's got Tua.
He's going to say, Tua! Are you talking to me? Because you better be talking to me.
They already asking him questions, and he's already had to answer it.
That's right. But here's why the other thing I'll give Lincoln Riley, and maybe he's falling into it, but look, all three of these guys got chips on their shoulders.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Jalen Hurts, okay, I'm not good enough. I'm going to go prove you wrong. Baker Mayfield walked on twice. Kyler Murray is the little dude syndrome. And in a big man's game.
Right.
And so all of them have chips on their shoulders. So I give Lincoln Riley credit, but I also,
absolutely,
these kids, man.
Jason Whitlock.
Are different.
Once is a chance. Twice is a coincidence. What's the third time? Damn pattern. You know why it's a pattern? Because it's the system.
Hey, guys. This is Jason Whitlock from Speak for Yourself. Are you ready for what's ahead? You can't always predict the future, but you can game plan for it. Generations of families and businesses have harnessed the power of Pacific to help them reach their unique goals. Whether you need to save enough money to meet your needs, ensure your family is protected, or make sure you don't run out of money, Pacific Life has a variety of financial solutions that can help. Pacific Life counts more than half of the 100 largest U.S. companies as its clients and has been named one of the 2019 world's most ethical companies by the Ethisphere Institute. Protecting what matters most to people for 150 years and counting, that's the power of Pacific. Ask a financial professional about how Pacific Life can help you game plan for the future or visit PacificLife.com.
All right, let's move to Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines, whose season is off to a promising start after scoring 40 points in week one where they debuted their new spread offense. This season, Harbaugh has surrendered control of play calling to new offensive coordinator Josh Gattis, who he said was practically flawless in week one. Joel, I think Harbaugh perhaps is listening to his critics and delegating properly, I would think, to Josh Gattis. I think this is a smart move by Jim Harbaugh.
Yeah, so I don't know if he's listening to his critics as much as he watched the film against Ohio State and Notre Dame a year ago. And this is what I mean by that. In the Harbaugh era, they have been really good against the teams that they're supposed to beat. And then as soon as they line up against a team that they are, you know, evenly matched with or even overmatched, what happens is that they have an inability to move the football when the run is taken away from them. So their ability to throw it relied on the fact that they needed play action or they needed second and five. But as soon as you were in second and long, third and long, and you knew they were dropping back between the tackles, they were not very good throwing the football. And so when they got down against Notre Dame, when they got down against Ohio State last year, that's the MO. It was basically done because they can't come back. They had no secondary pitch. So I think that's what the change in philosophy was all about. And to that point, in week one against Middle Tennessee, Shea Patterson threw 25 passes in the first half. He averaged throwing 25 passes a game last year. This is a much more up-tempo, wide-open style of offense that I think suits their players a lot more. They've got three of the best wide receivers in the country. Now, one of them did not play in week one because he had a boot on his right foot, but they've got some really special players. And so what they did is they took the fullback out of the lineup. They got a third wide receiver on the field. And I think this is the right way to go for Jim Harbaugh because it fixes what was clearly a glaring issue when overmatched in previous seasons. And it also puts the personnel that can be most successful for you this year on the field.
Look, I'm going to quote Jack Sears here, who is the USC four-star quarterback.
The transfer portal.
The transfer portal. The dude says something very profound that applies right here. If the plan doesn't work, change the plan, but never the goal. Guess what? This is a team that has never finished better than 10th in this final ranking. This is a team that has won the conference championship with Jim Harbaugh. Guess what he's realized? That, you know what? I am going to listen to my critics. I am going to self-correct. I am going to grade myself. And I also am not going to be so stubborn to think I know it all. And every level of advancement, especially when it comes to the offensive side of the football. So if you watch their game last week and you see the two quarterbacks sometimes in there at the same time, you start to realize that they're putting a lot more responsibility at the quarterback position because they want more out of this offense. So that's not the best indicator of 40-21 score against a lowly opponent, but it shows that they are certainly interested in doing more and being more dynamic. That's a self-correction that I'm always in favor of.
I'm always in favor of listening to my critics.
Same here.
I really believe in that. And that doesn't mean they're all right, but I always learn something about myself. So I think even if Jim Harbaugh is, I think it's a healthy thing if he's listening to his critics and making adjustments. I think smart people do that.
Mm-hmm. To your point, I think you make a great point. To your point, some of the best defensive coaches in our sport, in college game, have gone the route of changing their offensive philosophy in order to keep up with other high-powered offenses.
Yes.
You know how I know that? Nick Saban's Alabama team last year threw as a team 52 touchdown passes. 52 touchdown passes. Guess what? That led the country. If you were to tell me in 2010 that Nick Saban's team was going to lead the country throwing for touchdown passes, I would have said, you're crazy. That's not his philosophy. But what did he start to realize? He started getting beat by Deshaun Watson in the national championship. He said, I've got to change my offense. I got to get a quarterback out there that can spread it out and score points. And last year they threw 52 touchdown passes. So even great coaches like Nick Saban know that they have to adapt eventually and evolve eventually. And I think this is part of that process for Jim Harbaugh.
Joined once again by Bucky Brooks and Joel Klatt. All right, let's return to the NFL.
and another contract extension that is shaking the league this afternoon. The Los Angeles Rams handed their quarterback, Jared Goff, a $134 million contract extension. Mm. It's a four-year deal that averages $33.5 million a year. It's a bad deal. It's a ridiculous deal. Goff isn't worth it, not yet. But this is what we do with NFL quarterbacks. We pay them for what they might do. The Saints gave star receiver Michael Thomas a $100 million extension based on what he has done in his first 3 years in the NFL. Thomas led the league in receptions last season with 125. He caught 104 balls the year before. The Cowboys gave star running back Ezekiel Elliott $90 million in extension money based on what he's accomplished his first 3 years in the league. He led the league in rushing his rookie year and last season. Jared Goff has yet to lead the league in anything. He helped the Rams advance to the Super Bowl. He might develop into one of the league's top five quarterbacks. Might. There's a flaw in the NFL pay system. Young quarterbacks get paid on potential. Everyone else gets paid on production. The Dallas Cowboys are about to overpay their young quarterback, Dak Prescott. Dak is a shorter version of Goff with a lower ceiling and less postseason success. The market dictates that Dak be paid as much as Goff and the Eagles' young quarterback, Carson Wentz. The market isn't always right. You remember the inflated housing market from a decade ago? For about 10 straight years, greedy mortgage companies took advantage of a lax housing loan laws and sold homes to low-level hourly employees with bad credit scores and even worse debt-to-cash ratios. A handful of smart investors shorted the housing market. I'm doing the same thing to the quarterback market. Counting practice squad players, there are roughly 2,000 NFL players. Of that 2,000, approximately 100 of them are quarterbacks. That's 5%. Eventually, the other 95% of NFL players are going to figure out the QB market is unfair to them. Every NFL rule change in the past 40 years has made the quarterback position easier to play. You can't hit them low. You can't hit them high. You can't fall on top of them with your full weight. Mm. You can't jam their receivers for more than 5 yards. And now, if they show the tiniest bit of potential, NFL executives rush to overpay them. But Le'Veon Bell, Zeke Elliott, you guys tote this rock 350 to 400 times a year in the running and passing games, and we'll make you beg for half the salary of an average quarterback. Melvin Gordon, we don't need you. You're easily replaced. No one is going to complain when Patrick Mahomes gets paid $40 million a year. He's the reigning MVP. No one cares what Aaron Rodgers earns. Russell Wilson, get your money, honey. But making it rain on Goff, Dak, Wentz, Kirk Cousins, Jimmy Garoppolo, come on, man, that's insanity. This has to stop at some point. You know Jacoby Brissett is going to make the same money as Zeke this year? The 95% will wake up someday and realize this current pay system is unfair to them. They have to prove their worth to get paid. Quarterbacks just have to prove their potential. All right, guys, Marcellus, get us rolling.
Mm.
Is Goff still proof young quarterbacks are overpaid?
No.
No?
I think you've forgotten a couple elements here. One, every deal is a balance between potential and production. Every deal. And it's not just for the young. It's for the old as well. I got a couple examples here. One, if you're a 30-year-old Ezekiel Elliott who's been productive, you think they're going to pay you the same as they do when you're 24 years old?
Nope.
No. You know why? Because the potential, the forecast is different. You don't believe that, huh? Let's go back to this quarterback position. Proven or not, and let's talk about the most proven, Tom Brady. He just got a contract extension that took him from $15 to $23 million. Ooh, look at that face. I like that face right there. And you know why? Because the potential of you doing this.
He ain't greedy, but go ahead.
If the potential of Tom Brady continue to do this, let's bet against it. Let's just say that. Oh, it's not just Tom Brady. Drew Brees. Had to take $25 million per. And this is Drew Brees, MVP candidate last year. It's not just potential. Even when production has been shown, we still have an issue with you. So I like Jared Goff's deal for this simple fact. Last year in the Final Four of football, we saw four quarterbacks. We saw Tom Brady, Drew Brees, Patrick Mahomes, and to your point, coincidentally, to my point, oh, it's a reason, Jared Goff. So if you want to now just say he just lucked up and got there and doesn't deserve his money, I'm waiting for the next Whitlock, big dog.
I'm going to let y'all go ahead while I marinate.
Listen, I agree with Marcellus wholeheartedly. You act like he hasn't done anything. If you take away playing for a coach that was awful for him as a quarterback.
Awful.
100%. Jeff Fisher was awful for Jared Goff. Wouldn't you agree? Awful.
Yeah.
Give him an actual coach. What has he done? 24-7 as a starter, 60 touchdowns and 19 interceptions with a completion percentage of 63. That's unbelievable. That is
probably
damn good.
Probably the 12th best quarterback.
He also went to a Super Bowl. You act like
12th best quarterback. Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl.
Answer me something. Yeah. When's the last time the NFL rushing leader in the same year won the Super Bowl?
Ooh.
I don't
care. Take a stab at it.
I don't care.
It was Terrell Davis in 1998.
I don't care.
That's important? Because it doesn't matter anymore.
Get him.
Folks, in football, you pay one guy. And the reason is because that's the straw that stirs the drink.
And every role has been catered to him to make sure he can stir the drink.
That's not his fault.
That's not the straw fault.
If I'm an NFL player and I'm looking at all the money being funneled in one direction, that's my point.
I'm a team. I'm trying to win rings. Guess how I win rings?
I'm not blaming the team.
Paying running backs.
I'm trying to wake up the other 95% that there's one group of people that are being treated special.
What are they going to do about it?
You know, they got a union.
Stop.
They have a union.
What are they going
to
do?
Try to address this.
Try to address it. We should stop paying those guys that are the reason we win Super Bowls. What are you talking about?
If you think that's what Zeke thinks, you crazy.
If the Cowboys
win a Super Bowl, it won't be Dak did it.
Zeke was not holding out for a Super Bowl ring. Let's be very clear.
He's holding out for money.
That's right. Ooh. See, the player
because he'd earned it.
Stop. The player is concerned about the individual. The team is concerned about the team. That's why, as a team, if I was an NFL GM, guess how many times I would pay a running back or a wide receiver top five money in the NFL? Never. You know why? Because you don't win rings that way. Terrell Owens and Randy Moss and Dez Bryant and Odell Beckham and Antonio Brown. Did they ever win rings? No, they didn't.
Ooh. Who are their quarterbacks? I think that's the big issue. Who are the quarterbacks that were throwing to those guys? And what are they doing? Because here's where I have an issue. I have an issue that we can have any average quarterback make a bunch of money, and we don't dispute it. Jacoby Brissett is making more money than Zeke.
But isn't he more important to the Colts?
Is he a better player? If we were at the park, let's just take it. If we were at the park and this was the Turkey Bowl, and I had first pick, and I got Zeke, and I got Jacoby Brissett, who you want, Marcellus?
Don't put me in that.
Who you want?
I'm not here for that. I'm here for the food.
I'm
here for the turkey.
It's as simple as that. When we think about quarterbacks and the guys that should be in the $30 million club, it's only a handful of them. It's Brady, it's Breeze, it's Rodgers, it's Roethlisberger. We throw Russell Wilson in there, and then there's some possibles. But when we keep giving out these contracts, Jimmy Garoppolo, how did that treat us? $27.5 million. Mm. We're not getting a return on our investment. We're not going to the Super Bowl. Derek Carr, I hear he played at an MVP level, but he didn't win the MVP. So why are we continuing to dole out money to quarterbacks that we know aren't guys? They aren't the dude. But we fight guys that prove it on the field. It just bothers me. It's the only position where you can get away with being average and be a guy that is at the top of the food chain.
And it's because none of the other guys are the engine to the train.
Ooh.
Zeke Elliott is the engine in Dallas.
No,
Jerry
he's not.
Jones just called him the best player on the team.
Okay, great. And guess what that's going to get
the
you?
Owner.
Not a Super Bowl ring.
Ooh.
You're not going to ride a running back to a Super Bowl. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
I think you are taking some crazy pills.
To me, it's a hierarchy, right? It's a hierarchy, and I'm an elitist. I played the position, not very well, but I played it. If you don't have the quarterback, nothing else matters. That's why these quote-unquote average players, and I agree with you, these guys get paid too much for what they've actually done in the league, but it's because of how you have to build a team in the league in order to win a Super Bowl.
My point is, that's a great management argument. I'm talking directly to NFL players, the other 95%. Zeke's going to carry the ball between the passing and running game close to 400 times. He's going to take the most punishment on that Cowboys team, and particularly between him and Dak. And I'm just sorry. If I'm that guy, if I'm these other 95% that are laying it out there physically every week, and they're not making the game every damn rule change, make it easier for me to make tackles. I'm sitting there looking around like, why are we putting up with this system that the quarterbacks,
where
they don't
they
have to be that damn good.
The system, where are they going
to
go?
I have one thing to introduce to our conversation that may bring some light to it. I resist this morality that you're trying to bring into my meritocracy of sports, because with title does bring inflation. And if you don't believe me, go grab the best teacher in the world, professor, whoever it may be, and grab the worst CEO of a successful company and ask me who's gonna get paid more. So don't give me, well, you know what? Your impact is greater and you're doing this and that. You know what?
They work in two different professions, and teacher and CEO.
And you know what? They work in two different professions, and the way we get down in the playbook, in the locker room, a quarterback has to know 11 positions. No one else on that roster raises their hand to say that. And I'm going to tell on myself, damn it. There were times when coach would say, Marcellus, you got C-gap, cool. And then he'll go to Pat Williams, the D-tackle. You got B-gap, cool. Come back, coach. Don't ask me what Pat got, because I know I got C-gap. The damn quarterback can never answer that question like that and go out there and ball out. He is the CEO amongst a bunch of us.
You know what?
But is he really, though?
Yeah,
like, that part. So, like,
who has the most rings in NFL history?
Like, my issue with the whole quarterback thing, we're just paying the quarterback to be the quarterback, is because this is what we heard, and this is what we heard about Andrew Luck. Oh, my God, they ruined his career because they didn't give him help. Well, dang it, why are we paying him so much money if we got to help him? What is the point of paying him all that money if we got to now support him, get him an O-line, get him wide receivers, get him a running back? Where's the money going? Why are we paying him if we value him that much? Why are we paying the quarterback top dollar?
Because if you don't have him, you don't have a chance.
Yes.
That's the point, right? So it's the number one. I can't get to five, Bucky, unless I put number one there first.
If you don't have him.
If you don't have him, you don't have a chance.
With Nick Foles.
With that backup.
The same Nick Foles that I saw play for the Rams. That Nick Foles. He won a Super Bowl.
He won a Super Bowl.
Yep, he sure did.
But if you don't have him, you don't have a chance. Because no one else on that Philadelphia team had anything to do with that.
Mighty Nick Foles.
If the 95% of the NFL players are good with Joel's argument, y'all have...
Don't even show up
on Sunday. Just let the quarterback out there. He's got it.
This is the real thing. Joe said the realest thing.
What are they going
to
do?
Joe said the realest thing, and y'all just going to go fly by this. This is, okay, walk with me real quick. This is what they tell us in special teams meetings about blocking kicks. They say, if you go 100%, I can't guarantee you'll block it. But if you don't go 100%, I can guarantee you won't. If you ain't got a quarterback, I can guarantee you ain't got a chance. And that's what this situation is. Prove me wrong.
I should go through the list of teams that won Super Bowls with bad quarterbacks.
In this era?
Hell, Jared Goff's average ass just went to the Super Bowl.
That's the exception, not the rule.
Because he had Todd Gurley.
In the AFC.
How that looking at
because he had Todd Gurley. I know everyone dismisses Todd Gurley.
Aaron Donald needs to be getting that $134 million contract. He's the man.
The bowling ball was playing, not Gurley.
Look.
Welcome back, everyone. Santa Whitlock and Marcellus Wiley, TJ Houspensada, and LeVar Arrington are back with us as well. Let's return to the NFL.
I'm good, Santa.
Merry Christmas, everyone. We are less than 4 hours and 20 minutes from Santa Claus's sleigh dropping the Green Bay Packers and Chicago Bears down our chimneys. It's Christmas in September. You know, dashers and dancers and prancers and divas, comets and stupid and donners and blitzing.
Oh, wow.
But do you recall the most famous player of all? Tom Brady, the 6-ring winner, had a very shiny glow. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it blows. I've asked Santa Claus for a new Super Bowl winner. Respect to Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and Robert Kraft. I love and respect them. But in the words of Uncle Jimmy, the Patriots have become the socks and drawers of Christmas gifts. Nothing worse than going through an entire football season and unwrapping a Christmas gift of socks and drawers. Nobody wants the necessities on Christmas. We want shiny new toys. We want surprises. Socks and drawers are the back-to-school gift. When the playoffs come, I speak for every football fan, we're tired of Belichick and Brady. Give us Andy and Pat. That's Reed and Mahomes. I wrote a letter to the North Pole asking Roger Goodell to stuff my Super Bowl stocking with the Kansas City Chiefs. Chiefs haven't played in the Super Bowl in 50 years. The Jackson 5 had the number one song, I Want You Back. Richard Nixon was president. But this show isn't about what we want to happen. It's about what we think will happen. 4 hours before the start of the season, I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to win the Super Bowl. I think Big Ben is going to win MVP. The Antonio Brown fiasco is going to be the best thing that's happened to Big Ben Roethlisberger and Mike Tomlin since the Steelers drafted Brown in the sixth round 9 years ago. Brown's departure to Oakland has allowed Tomlin and Roethlisberger to remake their partnership and establish a more stable culture. Brown's departure also puts healthy pressure on Ben and Tomlin. They will respond with throwback seasons. Defensively, I expect Michigan linebacker Devin Bush to be a top candidate for Rookie of the Year. The Steelers traded up in the first round to get him. He's going to make an impact immediately. We won't have to wait long to see if I'm right. The Patriots and Steelers meet this Sunday. The Packers and the Bears are just our first gift of Christmas. The main gifts arrive on Sunday. All right. I don't know about y'all, but I went to bed early last night so that today would get here sooner. Marcellus?
That was bad. It was good, though.
What do you think of my Super Bowl pick?
The Pittsburgh Steelers? Yeah. First of all, you didn't stay in character. Come on, man.
I'm sorry.
Your voice just went back to Jason Whitlock with a damn beard. I was like,
I'm sorry. Beard is gone.
Yeah, where's our Emmy? It's not coming. You say the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to win the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And I have to push back and say I don't think so. We have to respect what this year is going to look like in difference to last year. Everyone's thinking it's going to be better because of mental makeup and the locker room chemistry, everything. But let's talk about on the field, X's and O's. I've been there before when I saw a number two receiver have to make the ascension to a number one receiver and struggled. Going from number two to number one is a big leap in terms of being a receiver. And Stephon Gilmore, Pro Bowl cornerback for the Patriots, even went on record this week and said about Juju being the guy and needing to prove it. We'll see. I don't know. Got to prove yourself every year. Everyone has to. That's the fun part. We'll see if he can prove it. So that's unproven.
Like all the other Pittsburgh receivers have done over the past 40
years. Oh, wow. I wish it was that easy. Man, I would have been Bruce Smith. But you know what? A little less, a lot less. Let's talk about the fact that their rushing attack, which was second to last year. And we're talking about James Conner. Have we seen him play 16 games healthy all the way through? No, we haven't. Another leap. And then I don't want to advance this team just because they got rid of the headache of AB. There's still some guilty parties who were convicted of their own indiscretions still in that locker room that needs to be fixed.
Just coal out of my stocking.
I really did. Basically, I'm pushing back against that saying, I don't think it's Steelers.
Man, I don't believe the Steelers as well. I mean, if this is the case, the Steelers
play for the Bengals. Ain't nobody surprised.
I'm trying to be as
go ahead. I was
transparent
joking.
And
I was
honest.
Joking, TJ.
No. What he just said, Juju's gonna get all the attention. And as much as you want to say, well, they've produced receivers, those receivers have been pretty good. And they've also, I'm gonna give you a name and see Lyman Swede. You remember him?
Oh, I do.
They drafted him in the second round. He didn't play well. From Texas, the Steelers, I'm talking, drafted him.
Yeah.
So they could have drafted Jordy Nelson that year. They draft Lyman Swede. The guy's got to be able to play. Me personally, who's going to win the Super Bowl? I'm going with the Rams. They bring the same team back. They get Cooper Kupp back, was a big plus in that offense.
Great.
You get pressure up the middle. The best guy to do that since probably John Randle and Warren Sapp, Aaron Donald. You affect the quarterback up the middle. Defensively, they're going to be strong. Offensively, they should be much better.
Not a bad pick.
So my Super Bowl pick would probably be the Rams and the Chiefs.
Not a bad pick.
I don't think it's the Steelers, and it pains me to say that because I am a Steelers fan. I always make that a point to say that.
You ain't going to say nothing to him because he ain't played for the Bengals, huh?
I think there are some real reasons why I'm not going to go with the Steelers, but I won't waste time on that because I think Marcellus did an excellent job of that. I'm going to go with the Chiefs, and I think the Chiefs got very close last year. And knowing how Andy Reid coaches and the coaching staffs that he's been able to assemble and how they're able to maximize the talent that they bring to the table, Mahomes will be
Andy's taking a lot of teams to the Super Bowl.
I tell you what, he knows how to win. He knows how to navigate. Well, he gets very close.
Gotcha.
He gets
I hope you're right.
He's not had to coach out a lot of organizations because he's had a lot of success, which, by the way, he did take another team by the Green Bay Packers.
You got the Chiefs. You're on the record.
I got the Chiefs
Marcellus,
on the record. How about that?
Yes. Let me rain on your pick the way you rained on mine.
I like the Chiefs as well.
They were
one possession away from being in the Super Bowl, going against the dynastic Patriots, And they had a first-year starting, second-year quarterback.
There you go.
Huh. So he's going to take a step forward. Then you look at how they drafted. They basically got Tyreek Hill 2.0 because they didn't think they were going to have Tyreek Hill 1.0 at that time. Then you get a full Sammy Watkins. Hopefully that's right. LeSean McCoy, whatever toothpaste left in that tube. New defensive coordinator. You got Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badgers out there. Frank Clark, new defensive mindset, scheme, and players.
Who they corners?
I didn't like that part.
They just got to stay healthy. Yeah.
All right, look, I'm going to go back to our conversations at the top of the show, though. What concerns me about the Chiefs, and look, I hope y'all right, but what concerns me, character does matter at some point, man. And Shady McCoy, Frank Clark, and again, maybe all these guys are innocent, and I don't know, Tyreek Hill, I just worry about the culture because I saw Marty Schottenheimer put together a team in 98 that I love. I love. They brought Chester McLaughlin in, and I was like, oh, my God, they're going 16-0.
Yeah,
I remember. And the character just wasn't right on that team, starting with Chester McLaughlin, and it just never got on track. That's a bit of my concern about the Kansas City Chiefs, just too many guys with off-the-field perceptions of problems. I just wonder if the culture is going to be right.
Didn't you do this last year with the Rams and all of their personalities and issues and how that wasn't going to work out?
That was about too much money being spent.
But it was also about Aqib Talib. It was also about Marcus Peters. Yeah, it sounds similar. I wasn't here.
Yeah,
yet.
No, I right.
When you win, man, those personalities in that dysfunction, they fall in line when you win.
They're going to win.
They fall in line.
They're going to win.
I will say this. I do think I've never seen anything like Patrick Mahomes and the kind of excitement and opportunity that everybody knows, like, man, we got a strike while this kid is rolling like this and has this kind of talent. That will build an excitement and an energy. And again, if I'm Tyreek Hill, if I'm LeSean McCoy, if I'm Frank Clark, these guys know if we go out here and win, no one's ever going to say a word.
And they
about
got years.
Y'all didn't mention Kelsey either. You got an elite tight end.
That's another person.
They got a lot of pieces.
But there's always one team.
That's true.
It's going to be one. Chicago Bears last year. Always one team that comes out of nowhere. Yeah. Oh, man, I didn't think they were going to be that good.
Mm-hmm.
Two Chiefs.
It's going to be the Cleveland Browns.
Everybody thinks they're good.
One Rams.
One with the Rams.
Joined once again by T.J. Houspenzada and LeVar Arrington. All right, let's talk some LeBron James. A couple of weeks ago, I upset the LBA community, LeBron apologist community, when I said their leader, LeBron James, suffers from fame and social media addiction. In the aftermath of LeBron's Hey Look at Me annex at his son's AAU game, I said fame is an addiction more dangerous than cocaine. Nate Burleson and other members of the LBA community rushed to the internet to preach to the world that LeBron is a good daddy.
Nate, dog.
He take care of his kids. Well, at the risk of upsetting LBAers, I'm going to once again point out that the latest example of the negative side effects of LeBron's addiction to fame. The 34-year-old basketball star claims to have identified football's most unique challenge and further claims to have invented a solution: glass helmets.
Players being inside a helmet and them not having no voice and no one knowing who they are because of the helmet. And no one ever truly knowing that there's actually a person inside there and not taking that seriously. They will be seen by uninterrupted. And this right here is the first glass helmet. And the meaning behind it is all these great athletes that play our wonderful sport of football will be heard and will be seen because they are, at the end of the day, they are people as well when they take these helmets off. And there are people when they have the helmets on as well. So.
When I first saw this, I thought it was a comedy skit. Mm. I thought LeBron was having some fun. And then I watched a 4-minute YouTube video titled The Glass Helmet Project, tackling one of football's most unique challenges. Oh, sweet Jesus. I think LeBron is serious. LeBron's sidekick, Maverick Carter, some nondescript former NFL player, Andrew Hawkins, and an artist are pushing the notion that glass helmets or symbolic glass helmets would liberate and humanize oppressed NFL players.
I could walk down the street, be the star of a football team, and nobody knows who I am.
because people don't recognize you. As players, we're kind of looked at as warriors or gladiators, right? And gladiators aren't people who you remember their name.
I think a lot of people, when it comes to football, they cheer for the laundry in the sense that they root for their teams more than having a direct connection with the players.
Hopefully one day we'll see glass helmets on the field.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
I don't know, man. Back in college,
man, stop.
I experimented with marijuana. Don't do it, kids. It's a waste of time.
Smoke weed every day.
Overrated. But what LeBron is doing here reminds me of what we used to do in college. There were a handful of serious smokers on the football team, and they'd call me and be like, Big Will, come over.
Big Will.
We got that purple dank straight from Cali.
Dank.
Ooh-wee.
Ooh-wee.
That's how LeBron feels about fame. He's calling NFL players. Antonio, AB, come over, dog. Me and Mav got that do-do-do. This glass helmet gonna increase your fame 20 times over. See, when you're addicted to something, you think everybody would be happier if they were addicted to it too. LeBron would be shocked to learn that not everyone wants to be famous. In fact, most people don't want to be famous. Oh, they might like a little hit of fame once or twice a year. It's cool. But on a day-to-day basis, most people just want to be left alone to enjoy their family and friends in anonymity. Besides, football isn't broken. It's 3 to 5 times more popular than basketball. No one has a problem recognizing Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, J.J. Watt, Von Miller, Zeke Elliott, Drew Brees, Odell Beckham Jr., Baker Mayfield, Cam Newton, Eli Manning. Do I need to go on? No one knows anyone in college basketball. You recognize these guys? Trevor Lawrence, Jalen Hurts, touchdown Tua, LeBron, pipe and the glass helmet down. Sit down at your kid's game. Stop with the Taco Tuesday foolishness. This commentary isn't an elaborate metaphor, LeBron. Your brain is on fame. Just say no. All right, guys, Marcellus. Get us started.
We can get us started. You already got us started. MC Hammer started.
Is this proof LeBron's addicted to fame?
Look, all right, let me just acknowledge the elephant in the room. What the hell is this transparent resin glass helmet? I mean, it makes no sense, but it actually does land somewhere, and the blame is not his fame or his seeking of fame. I blame business, and I blame Hollywood, and this is why. If anybody's ever had an idea, if anyone's ever thought of a business, thought of a product, the first thing they want to know beyond the idea is who's your team. Then to get traction, that team has to activate, usually in celebrity or in fame, to make it get traction. LeBron James is guilty of being only one thing, not fame controlled, not social media controlled, he's King Midas. And when King Midas has the Midas touch, everything he's a part of gets traction. Everything he's a part of basically gets greenlit regardless of concept. So this is what has happened to LeBron. I've been in too many pitch meetings. You can say the best thing in the world. So who's associated with that? If you say LeBron James, or better yet, LeBron James is the one saying it to you, okay, what do we have to do? We're involved, we're engaged. And so since he's King Midas, and I will be as guilty as him, when you got the Midas touch, you touch everything, even if it doesn't make any sense. So I'm not blaming social media, I'm not blaming fame, I'm blaming the fact that this dude could do no wrong, even when he does something like this that seems wrong. Mm.
To answer your question, is he addicted to fame? I have to say no. And the reason I say that is there hasn't been an athlete in the history of sports that's more famous than LeBron James. Yeah. I mean, he can go in any city in America across the country, and
Bill Gates don't want no more money.
But
Warren Buffett don't want no more.
You said,
money.
Is he addicted to fame?
No.
He's already famous.
No, I got it.
And so this helmet thing is not going to work. I mean, it's catchy. It's like, because once you put the ear pads and everything else in it, you're still in the same situation.
You know what Hugh Hefner did?
Uh-oh.
I done had enough Playboy bunnies. I don't need no more. Or did he say, bring me some more?
Of course. So
again, LeBron, the addiction. I got some family that used to like crack. They couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah.
It's not like, I've had enough.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I want more.
More.
Fame.
I don't see how much bigger he can get from that perspective.
You think Steve Ballmer don't want more money?
If you really think about this, and I'm sure they thought, once you put all the ear pads and everything else, you're in the same helmet.
Well, no, there's no doubt about
it. And the logos.
And the logos.
They're saying it's a metaphor, that it's not reality. But, again, you heard Maverick.
They didn't make it sound like it was. I thought it was a metaphor. But they're making it sound like they want guys to be in clear helmets.
Are we getting catfished up here? Are we getting catfished?
No, they're 100% saying that.
Oh. First and foremost, let's start with the fact that this is, once again, like Taco Tuesday. Takeo Spikes published a book called Under the Helmet. The illustration on the front of the book is a clear helmet. So you're not even being original with what it is that you're bringing to the table to begin with. Shouts out to Takeo for bringing stories and relevance to what we are as football players. By the way, an all-pro Pro Bowl football player.
Who will be here tomorrow on our show.
Shouts out.
Yeah.
All right.
Need to sue LeBron.
The interesting thing. Wow. How about it? I just think that he is in overdrive with empowering people. I have no problem with him trying to empower others. His school that he has is performing at a super high level. The things that he's doing, the empowerment of his boys to be able to do what they're doing, I have no problem with him enterprising off of what he brings to the table. I'm just a tad bit offended by pulling out a flimsy helmet that looks like a prototype with a 1978, 79 face mask frame, no type of guts, anything to the helmet. Look how flimsy that is. That looks like a penny jar. That looks like what you put your pennies and your nickels in. That is as flimsy an attempt to say you're doing something. And listen, I'm not a LeBron James apologist or a hater. Neither one. I like LeBron James. But if you're going to pull out a prototype, at least have a profound story connected to what it is that you're saying. I felt like it was a feeble attempt to sound super educated about what you're presenting.
Oh, you thought he sounded super educated?
No.
Feeble attempt.
Feeble.
Oh, it was feeble.
I got to push back at that one. All right, somebody said that helmet could be some at the concession stand. You get your stadium nachos.
Yes.
Popcorn. It wins there. I will push back and say one thing also about the presentation that really struck me is, like, if you're going to do this and you know it's a stretch, but to just do this, you got to sound like you know what you're talking about. The designer went up there and said, and we have this cage bar.
It's what you said, though, when you're LeBron James and your name's attached to it. It's going to gain traction.
And I love Hawk. I love Lil Hawk. I love Lil Hawk. Have Jerry Rice. Have somebody.
Well, I wasn't even talking about Andrew Hawk. Shout out to Columbia and the guy is smart, and Andrew Hawk is kills it. I'm not going there. Yeah, he went to Columbia.
Okay. Man, he went to the top of his seat, man.
But let me say this. Yeah. What was profound about what they're saying is what Tequila's talking about and what we hear a lot of times.
Go ahead.
A lot of this is about the sports culture. There is a helmet psychology. A lot of women actually bring this up. They say, you know why y'all football players always act up when y'all get out and y'all always doing too much, spending way more money than every other basketball, baseball. Baseball's more reserved. Basketball just chilling. Y'all know who we are. Football. Ah! You know why they say that? I'm going to tell you why they say that. Because nobody know who you are. Since you're hiding in anonymity, you want to all of a sudden do too much.
I take offense to that.
Well, I'm just telling you what's a narrative.
I take offense to that stereotype. I haven't met those people.
You are not one of them.
I ain't never acted up because I was not.
Marcellus,
so that's a narrative out there.
I think, and this is just me keeping it real. I think in my building this summer, there's been four or five NBA players that live there.
We had one on the show. Yeah.
And no offense to any of them. I had to ask who they were. Mm-hmm. Tall guys, black dudes, tatted up. Mm-hmm. Hey, blah, blah. You don't know them. There's the top echelon of NBA players that you know on site.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Just like the top echelon of football players you know on site. This whole thing that football players are somehow anonymous because they're playing under helmets
untrue.
And people don't treat them like humans.
Will y'all stop?
That's bogus.
That's not true, y'all stop, man.
You were recognized,
that's
huh?
not true.
Oh, I'm recognized because I'm big. I mean,
but most
that's
guys
what
aren't
NBA
always
players.
No. There are 6th, 7th men in the NBA that's going around here. Everybody know. Ain't no backups
in the NFL. It depends on what team they play for.
If you
play, I'm in the sports world, and I got five of them living in my building. I see them. I don't know them.
That's great, but also there's a generational gap. Look, look, you don't know every 20-something-year-old walking around here.
I get it, but I watch the NBA. It's my job.
And I respect that, but if we're going to say, look, top to top, we're the same, correct? Yes.
Yes.
Middle to middle, are we the same?
No.
The ratio.
No, that's all I'm saying.
I bet you by ratio it is. I bet you by ratio it's worse. I can get, and here's why. Because you have an offense and you have a defense. Dante Hall was never a major part of an offense outside of what he did on special teams.
And Dante Devin Hall Hester, will walk through the Fox Hills Mall and nobody will even stop
him.
Until you say, that's Dante Hall.
That's the joystick. Overwhelming majority of NBA players.
By ratio.
Yes.
Let's just go with stats.
Let's go.
4% of the American population is 6'2" or taller. Okay. So they're already, the average NBA player is 6'7". They're in a very small window of just human beings. When you see somebody 6'7", that's not the overwhelming majority of, it's their size.
You know the big difference too, though, is the NBA pushes the players, whereas the NFL pushes the NFL and not the players. That's the biggest difference, where the stars in the NBA, they get pushed. The stars in the NFL, they push the NFL.
The NFL pushes the stars they want to push. They push who they want to push.
Both of you are right. But, and this is my problem with LeBron. Again, trying to, basically what he's saying to NFL players, I'm going to make you more like me. And that's not good for business. The NFL has a completely different business model than the NBA.
That's true.
And it's very much so.
Far more successful than the NBA's model.
But for the brand, not the personal brand. So that's
where. No.
For the brand.
It generates more money, and at the end of the day, NFL players get a percentage of the money generated. It's good for the players, that business model for football.
But NBA players make more money than us.
There's less of
them. So he's saying
for the brand. Yeah, there you go. Go ahead. You got it.
There's only 15 on the team. There's 53 on the team.
We get it. We understand the ecosystem.
Right.
At the same time, we're talking about impact. We're talking about how it affects us, not only in our personal brand, but in how we're getting monetized. And it's a different experience in the NBA. These dudes in the NBA are making $40 million base salary on the court and making $40-plus million off the court. Name the football player doing that.
And I'm going to tell you. I'll tell you why.
Never.
I'll tell you why. If people wore cleats to work and you could sell cleats, you'd make that kind of money. These guys have shoe contracts because people buy tennis shoes.
You're making LeBron point. So now he's trying to go after the hardware, the equipment, and say, maybe if we tweak it, we can actually help you guys
And if you think Jerry Jones is going to go, oh, we're not going to sell this Cowboys helmet, we're going to sell this clear thing, get out of here.